My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Well, maybe it'll be step one. You know, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm grateful and privileged to be here. It's been about 3 years since I've done a step series here. I think 3 or 4 years. But it is good to be here. I see some friends, some people I know, so that's good. And a lot of people I haven't met before. So you don't know me and I don't know you, so we'll figure this thing out together. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way, I have a home group. It's the Carl Gables group. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor noticed that sometimes I would be anxious. And you know, about people. They would bother me. And he suggested to me that I should lower my expectations on people. Because I was always being disappointed by the way things are and the way people were. So I guess the first advice I was given a lot of advice when I first came in. My sponsor, the first thing he said to me, he gave me a 24-hour book and he said, look, he said, I want you to get on your knees and ask God's help to stay sober every day. And I don't remember him asking me my opinion about whether I believed in God or not. He just told me to do it. And he told me to read the 24-hour book every day. And he told me to join a home group. And what I'm going to do, and what I've been doing for the last 32, almost 33 years now, and I've been doing these series for about 30 years, is I'm going to try to share with you, as best as I can, my experience. Now, this is my experience, not your experience. These are my opinions. You know, you've been around for a long time. You start becoming opinionated. You know, I have no idea how many guys I've sponsored or men I've worked with. And based upon what's happened in my own life and what's happened in my own experiencing, watching people bounce in and out of here, I've gotten certain opinions. Strongly held opinions about what works in here, what doesn't work in here. You know, my first sponsor said, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. And, you know, we all know that alcoholics are brilliant, and nobody knows better about you than you, and nobody can tell you what to do. Our chief characteristic is defiance, but the truth of the matter is, what I've found is, although we all have ideas about things, strongly held ideas, you know, we call those are the ideas, what do they call them? We have to let go of our old ideas. So we come in here chock full. It took me about 20 years. I've still got a whole lot of old ideas, but I think the first 20 years it was just trying to unlearn some of the crap that was keeping me sick that I thought was so important. It takes a long time to unlearn stuff that feels so comfortable. You know, it says, I think, in the big book, it says, if I'm incorrect, you can tell me, you can read it yourself. It says alcohol is a symptom of the disease. Did anybody ever read that? It's a hell of a symptom. But it's just a symptom of the disease. Now, by the time I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my life had turned into a bottle. I came in when I was 31 years old. And it says a real problem. It says alcoholics are men and women who drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That's how it works, like that. You know, you may have to go to 50 meetings to get the effect. Like one shot of scotch gives you like that. You know. It says, that's what it says. It says we're restless, we're irritable, we're discontented, unless we can, and that's the way we are sober, by the way. That's sober. That's the sober deal. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic because no woman, no car, no suit of clothes, no amount of money, no title, no job, no nothing ever made me feel quite as well, quite as good, quite as fast as just a few drinks. And so I drank, and I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have to do for you what it did for me. And stop, you just ain't going to do it. It just works so well. And the thing is, my alcoholic life seems the only, that's what it says, your alcoholic life seems the only normal one. I mean, to think alcoholically, whatever that is, and I have an idea, I know what that's all about, seems normal and natural. To think and be unalcoholic is uncomfortable for me. You know, that's why I go to meetings, and that's why I have a sponsor, and that's why I read the book, and that's why I have to go through all this stuff over and over again, because if it was natural for me to feel, to think and be healthy, you know, Bill Wilson, when he talked about emotional sobriety, he said the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. That's either unhealthy dependencies on healthy things or unhealthy dependencies on unhealthy things. And that took me a long time to figure that one out, you know, what that's all about. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a few things from the big book just to sort of start us off, and, you know, a little pure AA, get into the thing, and give you an idea of where I'm at. And then I'm going to tell you a few stories. But, you know, before I get into that, I mean, you all have heard about the $10 cruise to the Bahamas. You guys ever take one of these cruises on these cruise ships, you know? It's pretty neat. Well, there was this deal on Miami Beach. I don't know how many people you heard about this. A friend of mine went on. He says where you could have a cruise to the Bahamas for $10. And this guy was walking along and he saw this building, and on the building it said "Cruises to the Bahamas, $10." So he walked in and he said, you got a sign there. It says "Cruises to the Bahamas, $10." And the guy said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, what's with the sign?" He says, "Well, what does it say?" He says, "It's a cruise to the Bahamas for $10. He said, "That's the deal." He says, You mean to tell me I can get a cruise to the Bahamas for $10? He says, "Absolutely. $10, that's all, no more." He said, "That's it." He says, "You're telling me I get a cruise to the Bahamas for $10. He says, "Absolutely, $10. You're on the cruise to the Bahamas. $10, no gimmicks, nothing." He says, "Let me tell you something. $10, he says, "You got $10 on you?" He says, "Absolutely." He says, "You're on the cruise." He says, "You give me the $10, you're on the cruise." The guy takes $10 out of his pocket. He gives the guy the $10. Next thing you know, he's whacked upside the head and he goes unconscious. Hours later, he wakes up from a haze and he's floating in the middle of the Gulf Stream, in the middle of the Atlantic, in an inner tube, all alone, and the sun is going down to the horizon. He's floating, I guess, eastward towards where the Bahamas is. He can't see any land this way. He can't see any land this way. He's floating in an inner tube. And what he sees is about 100 yards to the east of him, a little bit of farther along the way, he sees a guy in a baseball cap. And so he starts paddling to the guy with the baseball cap. And after he paddles real hard, he finally gets up to the guy with the baseball hat, and he looks at the guy. The guy's in a similar inner tube. And he says, "Do you believe this?" He says, "Do you believe this?" He says, "I walk into the place, $10 cruise to the Bahamas. I give the guy $10. I'm whacked upside the head. I'm unconscious. I'm in the middle of the bloody Atlantic Ocean. There's sharks all over the place. The sun is going down. You know, we're going to die. How can they do this? They can't get away with this." The guy, the baseball cat, he says, "You're telling me." He says, "You're telling me." He says, "No, this is criminal. This is unbelievable. How can these guys get away with this? There's got to be some sort of law. We're going to die." He says, hey, "You're telling me?" He says, no, this is not funny. This isn't a joke. This is crazy. There's no land in sight. I don't know where we're going. I mean, this is unbelievable. Who knows what's going to happen to us? We're going to die out here. This is, you know, some, there ought to be somebody, what's going to happen?" He says, "Hey, listen, buddy, you're telling me?" So they continue to sort of float there for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then finally, you know, the guy turns to the guy with the baseball cap and he says, "You think they feed us on this cruise?" And the guy in the baseball cap says, "I don't know. They didn't last year." And you know why? I think I'm trying to figure out why that's so funny. It's funny because it's hard to believe that somebody could be that stupid. That stupid to do the same thing over and over again. I mean, how could somebody be so stupid as to do the same thing over and over again? It's sort of funny.
Must be insane.
That's how you guys got in. That's how we let you guys into the closed meetings. That's the qualification. The qualification for the closed meetings is the guys in the baseball caps. We let them in the closed meetings. The smart guys. The guys that know everything. So let me read a couple of things, and then I want to tell you about it. I'll talk a little bit about what's going on here. You know, maybe it'll be about the first step. Maybe it'll be about the 10th step. Maybe, you know what? The bottom line is, if you're doing a meeting with 200, 300 people, whatever it is, there's 300 different meetings going on. Because everybody's at a different place, at a different spot. I've done enough meetings all over the United States and different parts of the world that, you know, I'll do a meeting, there'll be whatever, a lot of people. And then after the meeting, some guy will come up to me and say, you know, that really was a great meeting about this. And he'll out of an hour meeting, he'll talk about one part. And he'll say how it has to do with his 10th step. And another guy will come up to me and say, that was a great meeting. He'll talk about a completely different part, you know, and it'll be about his third step. And it really all depends whatever you're on and what's going on with you. You're going to get out of it whatever you're supposed to get out of it. So let me read you a couple of spots I picked out. You know, there may be some sort of connection. This is on page 29 of the big book. This is our basic text. This is the text we're supposed to all agree on. We're going to do a lot. We're going to do a lot of work on this thing. We're going to talk a lot about this. And Dr. Bob and the good old timers, hey, listen, if you really want to get into this thing, if you really want to do this thing, if you're serious, if you're not a dilettante, if you want to grow up in this thing, if you want to get 20, 30 years, if you want to not only have spiritual sobriety but emotional sobriety, you know, if you want to stop being a thumb-sucking crybaby, if you want to get into that, you know, where they separate the men from the boy, you know what they say in the back, in the last page, they say, we'll surely see some of you in the fellowship of the Spirit. You want to get into that fellowship of the Spirit deal? They talk about, you know, the part in the book where they say we've experienced much of heaven. We've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. Or maybe you just want to be one of those guys that you got like 20 years and somebody asks how you doing. You say, hanging in there. I mean, maybe you just want to hang in there, you know. Hanging in there. I'm hanging, you know. But if you want that rocket ship ride, if you want to be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, if you want that permanent sobriety, if you want that deal going on, if you want everything you can get out of this deal, you know, fellowship deal of the spirit gets populated around the sixth step. You know, the sixth step in the 12 and 12 says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Do you know that? That's in our literature. It says there's a separation. Now, actually, there's a separation all along the way. I've seen it happen. You can watch it happen. You know, I've seen people be separated out. Some of them actually sort of hang in there. You know, they don't really do well. They hang in there, but they're on their 14th marriage and popping Viagra because they think that's the answer, getting breast implants or whatever the hell they're doing, trying to fix themselves up or add some sort of accoutrements to their body or gathering stuff or chasing the same horseshit they were trying to chase before they came in here, which never made them happy, and they're a sorry bunch. But the bomb lays, but most of them just burn off with the alcohol. They keep on drinking and drugging. But apparently, somewhere around the sixth step, there is a separation between the men and the boys. And the men, according to our book, are those who repeatedly try these things so they grow in the image and likeness of their creator. And the boys are the ones that are sucking their thumbs trying to be cool. And laughing and making fun of the guys that are really doing this thing. While they're sitting around worrying about themselves and worrying about what other people think about them. And spending a whole life trying to look good because they're worried about what other people think about him. Because like Carl Menninger said in the book that he wrote in the 1930s, Man Against Himself, when he had that chapter on alcoholism, he said alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves, which is the real deal with alcoholics. They basically think that they're pieces of shit, which is probably why when you're in the shower, you're in the car, and you're driving along, every once in a while you say, I'm an asshole, you know, I'm an asshole, I'll never get better. That's probably why you do all that self-talk in those tapes where you call yourself a piece of crap all the time. Out of nowhere. And you turn around and say, who's calling me that? And it's you. You're the only one there. And when you hear those voices that come like from Venus, that's basically you telling you what you think about you. That's your reputation of you with you. And you don't hear that stuff all the time, but just because you don't hear it all the time, it's not like it goes on vacation to Arkansas or something. It's still deep inside of you. And wherever that voice came from, and believe me, it doesn't come from the committee. Don't worry about the committee. The committee won't hurt you because at least you're invited to the meetings. You know what I mean? What you got to worry about is the executive committee that is meeting real deep down inside of you. That's the committee that's sending up that crap saying you're a piece of shit, you ought to be dead. That's condemning you all the time. And that's you on you. And that's where the real alcoholism is. And that's the disease that centers in our mind, not our body. That's the causes and conditions. And a lot of people stop the drinking crap, but they just can't stop the thinking crap. So you can stop the drinking crap, but where do you stop the stuff when you say, they can't do that to me, they don't know who the hell they're screwing with, I'll show them. Where are you going to stop that crap? Where do you stop becoming a thumb-sucking crybaby and feeling sorry for yourself and constantly being upset with people? Why can't you stay married for 30 years? Why can't you raise kids, have grandkids? Why can't you be like what you see other people? Why is life such a problem, so uncomfortable, so difficult for you? Why are you always thinking about yourself? Why do you always have to have the radio on, be texting, doing all that horse shit you do, have the TV on, be on the telephone because you can't stand alone in a room with yourself with just your thoughts because they're always bad thoughts about yourself and other people. Bad thoughts about yourself and other people. And it isn't even about the booze because you're not even drinking. You got 18 months, you got 2 years, you got 5 years, whatever it is. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, your mind is killing you. And you don't even know what it is. And what it really is because you're nothing. You've always been a nothing. You're always going to be a nothing. You're never going to be anything but a nothing. I used to put something in my body. It turned me into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. You'll do anything to become something, something tangible, something justifiable instead of the worthless piece of shit you are. Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about alcoholism. So in any event, here's what it says on page 29. I digress. Of course, I can tell I'm not talking about you. I don't want you guys to take offense or anything. I'm not talking about you. Because I can always tell when I'm in the presence of, you know, alcoholics who are at a higher level. This is sort of like the Mensa of alcohol. I'm talking about the alcoholics in my home group. They're not as well as you guys. It's always good to be here in Well People's Anonymous. I told my sponsor once, I was bitching and moaning about, you want to get a resentment, just go to AA, you know? Just hang around the alcoholics, you know? Just sponsor a lot of alcoholics. You'll learn about what resentment's all about, you know? And what, Russ? An alcoholic said he'd do something and he let you down? He didn't do it? He didn't show up? You know, when all's said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done in here. This is, you know, he says, this is not exactly Well People's Anonymous, trust me. Alcoholics Anonymous would be great if it wasn't populated with alcoholics. But in any event, I digress. Page 29. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, that would be me, I'm the individual tonight, in the personal stories, that's me, I'm going to tell some personal stories, describes in his own language, my own language, and from his own point of view, this is my point of view, not yours, the way he established his relationship with God. That's what an AA story is all about. It's about God. That's what this book is all about. That's what the steps are all about. That's why at the very end on step 11, you end up right where you're supposed to be with a relationship with God and trying to improve that. That's why the sixth step says the men are the ones who try repeatedly all their lives to grow in the image and likeness of their creator because it's all about God. But since alcoholics are scared of that crap because they want to be in control because they have the corrosive thread of fear that runs through their life all the time. They don't even know it's fear. You know, I'm a practicing lawyer. I have people that come into my office and they're scared shitless, but they don't know they're scared shitless. They always come in with a story. Story all sounds the same. You know, usually when they come in, it's not because they haven't been doing anything wrong. They've been doing something wrong for years, but getting away with it. But all of a sudden, the indictment comes. The marriage is broken up. They get served with papers. They're in my office. They're here to tell me their story. The story sounds something like this. You got to understand, it's not my fault. And then they spend the next hour explaining to them how they're innocent. It's not their fault. It's somebody else's fault. And I have a sign on my desk. It's from A Few Good Men, the movie Few Good Men. It says, by Jack Nicholson, maybe you've heard him say that. He says, the truth, you can't handle the truth. And I know that if he tells that story before the judge or before the jury, they're going to put him not in the jail, they're going to put him under the jail. Because the story's bullshit. But you see, it makes sense to him. On planet defendant, it makes sense. So the best thing I can do with this guy is sort of bring him down onto the planet Earth where we all live and let him see exactly what's going on, which in AA takes about 3 or 4, 5 or 10 years. Before you come down, you realize exactly who and what you are. That you're not the worst and you're not the greatest and you're not really much of anything, actually. You don't have much, you don't have too much power. Basically, sort of like an ant on a log going down a river. Every once in a while, the log goes on a bend in the river. You sort of think you're steering the log, but you're not. It's going where it's going, you know. You can sort of like position yourself a millimeter here, a millimeter there in order to get less wet, which is what we do, but pretty much it's going where it's going, you know, and that sort of steal. So, you know, the best thing I could do is try to somehow, in some way, over a period of time, you know, get this guy to see exactly who and what he is and see the reality of all that stuff. Because it's very hard to see the reality of life when all you do is think about yourself, because it's all about me, 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 me. And so I'm going out with some gal named Lynn, and I don't know, I'm 20 years old, and she's the love of my life, and I'm going to the University of Miami, and I have that obsessive sort of alky love, you know, that alky love, you know, where you capture them, and, you know, you're always thinking about them, and you always got to be with them, and who are they with, and alky, you know, for a year, I'm like obsessing, you know, of her. We're together for a year, every day, every night, you know, and so around Christmas time, she says to me, because she had come from New Jersey, she said to me this, because I was in love, we were in love, you know, and when you're in love, I'm in love, you know, that, you know, yes, I killed those 15 people, but I'm in love, you know, I'm in love, you know? So love is the most important thing in the world, all romance, did you know the big book, you know what it says, you know what the 12 says about romance? It says it'll kill you. That's not me. Don't blame me. I'm just the messenger. It says romance will kill you. You know, it's like booze. It says you want to feast on romance. You think romance is going to make you happy. Man, you know, whenever I see a gal or a guy, you know, especially the gals, that's a big gal thing, you know. They're depressed because they're not in a romantic relationship. What horse shit. What childish horse shit. How long do you think it takes to grow out of that? Most of them don't ever grow out of it. They die thinking if they only found some guy. And I like guys. I know guys. I sponsor a lot of guys. I think guys are the greatest things in the world. But man, I'll tell you, I feel sorry for anybody who pins their life on a guy, who needs a guy. Because they're fickle. They're fickle. And, you know, even the best ones in the best days, you know, really aren't that great. Just as much as I feel that the men in here who are always seeking, you know, sniffing around here for some gal or, you know, some sex or something like that, thinking that'll fix them. They're pretty pathetic creatures, and most of them drink anyway. The whole bunch of cowards and whores. You know what a whore is? A whore is somebody who basically compromises their ideas and compromises what's important to sell out for cheap shit. Well, the good news is if what I'm saying bothers you, now if what I'm saying bothers you, I have some good news for you. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So if it bothers you, you owe me like a copayment because I've just given you a spiritual MRI. And you can go out and hate me and you'll be, well, the good news is you'll go out of here and you'll be thinking about me and pissed off at me and everything like that. And I'll go out here and I'm going to go have some ice cream. You know? I'll probably change my mind. I say, why did I even say that shit? I don't even know. So here's what will happen. Most people will get all pissed off and, you know, all mad and something. Maybe they'll drink or whatever it is. But every once in a while, some people actually work this program. They'll maybe do a list. They'll go up their sponsors. That son of a bitch, I can't stand that guy. And they'll do a list, you know, like one of those four steps say, you know, they'll say, Russell, you know, he thinks he's so big. He's arrogant, you know, but he doesn't know me. Everything. He says this. He says, you'll write it all down. You'll pray about it. You'll tell somebody about it. You'll do a fist up about it. And then all of a sudden, you'll see something. You'll have an epiphany. You know what I mean? And you'll say, now, you know something? You'll be like one of these people. You'll see why it pisses you off, why it makes you uncomfortable. Maybe you'll see some truth in it about yourself. And you'll say, you know, somebody's right. And it pissed me off that he said that shit. And it has nothing to do with him. It has to do with me. And then you'll be one of those bananas that 5 years from now say, you know, I used to hate you when I first heard you, but now I love you. And then as soon as you find out why I pissed you off by saying whatever I said, and all of a sudden, I won't piss you off anymore. And then here's what you'll find. You'll find that there's a whole layer of people that have been pissing you off. And all of a sudden, they're not pissing you off either. Because whatever that thing you tweaked inside of you, because of your growth and realizing your maturity as to what it is about what I said that pissed you off, what you don't realize is that's the reason why you're divorced. That's why you've never had a decent relationship. That's the reason why other people pissed you off. Because it was that thing, not about the other person, but about yourself, which didn't allow you to live a happy and joyous life. And that's the way we work in here. You get a resentment, but instead of drinking over it and feeling sorry for yourself and sucking your thumb, you grow up, you tool up, you say, what is it? You do the spiritual axiom. Whenever I'm disturbed by the cause, there's something wrong with me. He may be an idiot, but you know something? There's something wrong with me. Why does this bother me? And you find out why you're upset, and you find out you're upset because you're upsettable. And then you look into that deal, and you ask for God's help, and you do it the way we do it, and all of a sudden, you're not upsettable anymore, and all of a sudden, life isn't, all of a sudden, the life that's pissing you off doesn't piss you off that much anymore. And that's the way it works. So, in any event, so let's, okay. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. So here's the next one. So, Lynn Benson. Lynn, you remember Lynn?
Yeah.
I was in love with her. You might have loved my life.
Yeah.
So we're going out together for a year. I'm 20 years old, 21 years old. And in December, she tells me the following. She says, my parents, who has been financing her all the way through this deal, they say they would like me to come home for Christmas. That's what she does. She says to me, they would like me to come home to New Jersey for Christmas. This is the love of my life. I love her. I care about her. And I look at her and I say the following. All of a sudden, it wells up in me this rage. You ever, rage. And I go, and this is what I say. I say, but what about me? You're laughing. You don't know what it's like. You know what I mean? I say, but what about me? Because you see, this thing that I had that was called love, it had nothing to do with love. I could give a crap about her parents, everything. She could drop that. You know what I mean? If she had left me for another guy, I would have felt horrible. I mean, if she got run over by a steamroller, it wouldn't be so bad. But you know what I mean? It's all about me. It's all about, you see, my whole life, it's what about me? It's all about me. You scratch the surface of anything, it's about me. I care about me. And that's what it's all been. That's just, that, all that does is tell me who, and of course, I didn't, the stuff I'm telling you now, looking back on it, after everything I've learned and watched about myself and being stripped down naked so that I could see myself transparent in the mirror, I understand some of my motives and everything now, and I don't put virtue on them. I don't gloss over them. I understand what the deal is. But back then, I thought it was all about love. I'm in love. I didn't even know what love was. I know what love was. I didn't know what happens when you actually care about somebody. Because when you actually care about something, you're happy that they're going home. Of course, after I bought my plane ticket and followed her up there, you know. Because that's what we do. We stalk people. But in any event. Yeah, you guys are laughing. You see, you're laughing at me. Yeah, come here. I try to throw out to you all my problems and everything. Okay, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. It's all about God. This is not me, you know. This is, you know what you need to do? You need to call New York and tell them that there's some old-timer reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Talking about God. Listen to this, page 68. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. So you guys might think, you go to A rooms, you hear people say, oh, he talks too much about God and all that sort of stuff about the God thing and talks too much about God. I haven't even gotten started. You got to hang around to the 12th step. You're not going to believe it. It's going to get really sick. You know, and you think because you hear people in the room, you think that A is like anti-God, anti-religion, everything like that, and that's nothing. You know what that is? That's the sickness. When you see people putting down the church, that's the sickness. That's not AA. That's the sickness. See, what AA is, it says we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. We begin to see where they're right. We encourage church membership. And there's a reason for that. We'll get into that in the 11th step. See, AA is about understanding that it's not the church, it's not religious people, that's not a dirty word. Most of the guys that started this thing were religious, they belonged to churches. Bill Wilson was essentially sponsored by clergymen. As a matter of fact, in the 6th step, where it says, this is the stuff that separates men from boys. It says, as a well-learned clergyman who helped write the book, it was this one happened to be Ed Dowling. He's the one who basically helped him. Also, Sam Shoemaker put the 12 steps together with him. You know, the whole thing is filtered through. The Oxford group was an evangelical Christian movement. You don't have to like it. You're entitled to your opinion. You're just not entitled to your own facts. You need to read. You can have your own opinion. You just can't have your facts. The facts are clear. You got to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers if you're serious about it. You know, it says, hey, listen, how about this? AA was started. When was AA started? You guys don't even know? When was AA started? 35. When was the big book written?
39.
AA started in 35. Big book written in 1939. What's the difference?
4 years.
4 years. In 1939, they wrote a book. This is what they said in the book. They said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Now, I want you to listen to this. Listen to this. I'm a wordsmith. I'm an attorney. I know it's rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. This is what they said. Now, here's what they said in the big book. I'm going to read this. It says, we have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Now, you may be in here for the not drinking. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm a big guy who believes in not drinking. I don't even think you get into the ballpark unless you stop drinking. But this says that you found much of heaven and have been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Now, I want that rocket ship wide. If I'm going to hang around here for 14 years, I don't want to be at 14 or 20 years hanging in there up at 3 o'clock in the morning sucking my thumb. You know, I don't want to be doing that stuff, okay? The great fact is just this and nothing less, which I think means that the great fact is this, you ready for this, and nothing less. I don't think it's less than this. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows in God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty, not questionable doubt, not I don't know, the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. As a matter of fact, the promises later on, they say the same exact thing. He is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. As a matter of fact, in every meeting we read, there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. As a matter of fact, it says you can't manage your own life. No human power can help you out, only God couldn't, what if he was sought? I think they were serious. So they write this book and they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. They write that in 1939, which I think means, you ready for this? If you do what we did, you'll get what we got. Do I get an amen on that? Is that okay? Okay. Now, if you do what we did, you'll get what we got. It does not mean if you do whatever the hell you want to do, you'll get what we got. If you do what we did, you'll get what we got. Right? Okay. Is that okay? You got that?
Amen.
Okay. Now, let me tell you something. They did not read the big book.
There wasn't a big book.
Now, you know what they read? Dr. Bob in the Good Old Times says they were absolutely convinced that the cure resided in something called the Good Book of the Bible. And the books that the founders found absolutely essential was Sermon on the Mount, the Book of James, we were almost called the James Club, and 1 Corinthians 13. Now, you don't have to like it. I don't really give a crap whether you like it. I mean, you're alcoholics. You don't like most of the stuff. You don't even like yourself. You know what? I mean, I'm going to base my sobriety on your feelings about whether you like it or not. I mean, this is not a dress rehearsal. James, this isn't a dress rehearsal. This is your life. I'm going to judge what's going to happen for the rest of my life. I'm married 32 years. I got 4 children, 6 grandchildren. I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. I hang out with guys that have a different deal, a different attitude about things. Sponsoring people, most of which are going to end up drinking, sucking their thumb, chasing after stupid stuff, not serious contenders. And I'm going to allow some thumb-sucking crybaby in an A room just because something bothers him. I'm going to sit there and worry about some banana sitting next to me in an AA room that can't even keep a decent relationship with another human being going, what he thinks and feels about things. Because the bottom line is, because I'm an alcoholic, so I'm a please love me a holic. Why don't hate me a holic? Please accept me a holic. You know, I walk into that bar and I say, will they like me? Will they accept me and everything? So I slug down some booze so I could be, you know, I'm worried about whether I'm going to join the group. So I slug down some booze. Now I feel like I'm president of the group because I got to drink in order to do stuff because I can't do without the drinking because I don't have the whatever it is it takes to live life without booze or without something, because I'm so scared about what other people think about me, and then those are people I'm going to allow who's going to decide for me what my life's going to be. Incredible. And I'm not going to do this program because if I talk too much about God, they'll look at me funny. Unbelievable. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon God, our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. Did you know that? All men of faith have courage. And you know what people have that don't have, that aren't of faith? They're the ones that go out of the room and behind other people's back talk bad shit about them. Because they don't have the balls to come up and tell them to their face. So what they do is they go, bah, 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 and they talk bad crap about other people behind their back, and that's what alcoholics do, because they're little people and they feel shitty about themselves. And when you feel shitty about yourself, all you do is think shitty things about other people. And what you don't understand is it's a spiritual axiom. When all you do is think shit about other people, that's where those voices come. That's why you tell yourself you're a piece of shit, because nobody knows what a piece of shit you are more than you. And unless you're psychotic, you know, the bottom line is you have a conscience. And you may fool yourself, but your conscience knows what a piece of crap you are. They know it's wrong to gossip about other people and think bad crap about other people behind their back. So the only person you hurt is you. And that's where the real alcoholism is. It's not with the drinking. The drinking, you know what the drinking is? That's the tail end of not curing that. Not handling the stuff I'm talking about. Drinking is what happens when you don't handle that stuff. You know? Or all sorts of other spiritual diseases. You know? Lack of integrity. Spending more money than you make. You know, man, listen, I spent more money I didn't have buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't even like, you can possibly imagine. Maxing out credit cards, doing all sorts of stuff. Why? Because you can't even feel good about yourself unless you buy this blouse or get that thing or add this thing. Because God knows you can't be the way you are. I mean, you know, you get a scratch in your car. You know what I mean? It costs $500 to fix it. You only have $600 in the bank. So what do? You fix it. Because people will see a scratch in your car and you can't drive around with a scratch, because what will they think about you? And they're not even thinking about you. But you can't live your life. And when you have that deal going for you, how do you expect to live a decent life when that's the way your brain works? And you don't even know that your brain's working that way. You just know you got to fix that scratch because it's bothering you. That's the real alcoholism. They don't arrest you for stuff like that. They don't arrest you for driving while lusting or driving while feeling sorry for you. They don't say, "I'm sorry, sir. I'm pulling you over. Could you get out of the ambulance? I happen to notice that you were feeling sorry for yourself while you were driving." Or... Paradoxically, as a way of strength, the verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. And believe me, fear is the same thing as anxiety. It's the same thing as concern. And we're even scared to tell people we're scared. Guys come into my office. They tell me, "I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. I think this is going to happen." And I say to them, "Oh, so you're scared." He says, "No, I didn't say that." I said, "I'm concerned." You know what I mean? Because we're so worried about the fact that other people might think we're worried that we don't want to tell other people we're worried because they may think badly about us. And that's a whole different other type of fear. And that is ingrained with you. Let me tell you something, to the day you drop dead. And sure, you can get rid of the booze, but how are you going to get rid of that crap? How are you going to do that deal? So here we go. And he sold himself short. And then a couple more stories, then we're out of here. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am, and over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I'll always cherish. Now, here we go. Here's the deal. I'm rated. This is, you know who this guy is? This is one of the guys that got sober during that four-year deal, or maybe a little bit after that. You know, the four-year guys, you know, before the big book. When they were focused, you know, when they got you down on your knees and you had to give your life to God. Did you know that? You got to read that book sometime. They wouldn't even let you go to a meeting unless you got down on your knees. Then worry about that third step. There wasn't much talk in those meetings about, I'll tell you what, it was a real qualifier. You know, they didn't have a lot of stuff in their meetings. Is, I don't know whether I believe in God, or I don't, you know, they wouldn't let you in the meeting unless you got down on your knees. Now, I'm not saying we do that here. I'm not saying you have to do that here, but that's the way they did it during the first 4 years. You got down on your knees and you gave your life to God. And that's when you didn't want to do that, you say, have a nice life. You know, you read Dr. Bob, you read Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 and read that 12, how they 12-stepped him and how they said to him, do you believe in God? And he says, if you don't, that's fine. We're not here to change your life. We'll go look for somebody who's interested. They weren't begging people to come in. They're trying to help people. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. Don't got a lot of stuff, but here it comes. I have a fortune. In friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, what do you think is the most important thing in this guy? What do you think the great thing is for this guy? So what do you think? It says, above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. You ready for this? The love and understanding of a gracious God. The love, and this is, in my opinion, this is the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This is what this book's all about. I don't know what means you go to. I don't even know what fellowship you're in. I mean, just because you're in an AA, just because you're in a garage doesn't mean you're a Buick. Just because you're sitting here doesn't mean you're an AA. I don't know what fellowship you're in. I'm in a fellowship that focuses entirely upon God and your relationship with God, that says that the last thing, see to it, your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. I'm in a fellowship that says, has a sign up on the walls that says, first things first, which was Dr. Bob's coining a phrase from the Bible, seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. I'm not in the fellowship of people that smoke and joke and make fun of people that believe in God. I'm not in that fellowship. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not in a fellowship where people stay sober for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and then drink or drug or pop pills or look at pornography or do whatever the hell they do in order to sort of feel good about themselves because they feel so shitty about themselves. I'm not in one of those. I want what these guys had during the last 4 years. I want what this guy has. Who said, above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust, where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. That's the fellowship I'm in. That deal. Those are the guys I hang around with. That's the guy I want to be like. I want what they have. He says, if you want what we have, you have to develop a we. It says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain. You're not even ready until you develop a we. You're not even ready until you want what we have, and that means you got to have a we. You got to have a people, something that you say, I want what that guy has. I want what that gal has. So we got enough time for a couple of stories. So I'll do a pre-AA and a post-AA. If there's something in it. Well, maybe. We'll see. So, in any event, I don't know when I first, I think I was probably born alcoholic. You know, before I was drinking, I was probably an alcoholic. Probably runs them, you know. So, in any event, one day when I was 16 years old, I discovered Playboy magazine. I'm probably the only guy in here who's ever discovered that, you know. The only magazine you read like this, you know. And as soon as I saw my first Playboy magazine at 16, I knew what I needed to be okay. I absolutely knew what I needed to be okay. And I knew if I had one of them bunny things, you know what I mean? That would solve all my problems. You know what I mean? That's an old idea, guys, that's very hard to get rid of. And I want to tell you something. This is for the guys, but it's also for the girls, too, because they got their own deal going on. You know, because here's the deal. You need to understand something. The world out there, the world, and to a certain extent, some of the guys and gals in here, is not out to help you. It's out to kill you. It's not out to help you find God. It's not out to help you have a relationship with God. The world is out there to kill you because of money or whatever it is. You go out there and look at the next billboard.
where you see the beautiful watch or the beautiful car, the beautiful gal, or we're driving up there, I saw $38 breast enlargements. You know, you see, you watch every TV show. The guys that are doing the news look handsomer than I'll ever be. The gals that are doing the weather look like, and of course, they don't even look like that. They're made up, and you know, the movies, the TV, it's like an entire world that's filled with mirrors. It's like a house of mirrors, all telling me I'm just totally insufficient unless I have this, or I can get that, or I weigh this, or I look like that. I mean, the whole world designed to tell me I might as well kill myself. It ain't never going to happen for me. Everybody's richer, better looking, has more, and the whole thing is sitting there, billboards, just designed to sell and tell us that we need this in order to be okay. And we're inundated with that for 24/7, and then we come in here for 1 hour, you know what I mean? And hang out with people that are talking about that shit and getting more of that shit. Half the people are talking about that crap anyway. If I only had this, I'd be. I was a yes butter and an if onlier, and a you don't understand her. Yeah, if I only had this, if I only had that, if I only had a car, if I only had a job, if I only could get this thing, then I'd be okay, and I'd be okay for a week, and that's the deal. So I saw this Playboy magazine, and I said, well, if I could have one of those, I'd be okay. And in order to get one of those, you got to get a car. Because if you get a car, you know, that's the big thing about getting a car. You get a really cool car so you can get one of them Playboy thing, the bunny deals. So I think I only have time for this story, so I'll just tell this story. So I get, I was about 17, 18 years old. I had inherited some money, about $6,000-$7,000 or something like that, which back then was a lot of money, you know? You could buy a car for that. And it was 1967, 60, I can't remember, 1970. It was the first year the Camaros, the fastback Camaros came in. I know there's some guys here that might. Any guys here 64, 63, 64, yes. 65, you know, with the fastback Camaros? At the same time, they had the Firebirds. The Firebird, they look sort of like similar. But I saw the first Camaro. It was gold with those vinyl tops. What do they call it? Whatever they call it. It was, they're kind of ratty now, but they were vinyl tops, and they were... And they were gold. This one was gold, and it was in Patampton Chevrolet. It was right in the showroom floor. And I had to have that car. If I had that car, I'd be okay. If I had that blouse, I'd be okay. Man, if I had them breasts, I'd be okay. If I had that, oh man, if I could have that Viagra, if I had that haircut, I'd be okay. If I had that job, I'd be okay. But I knew this car was a game changer. And I ran down there and I put down my money. I want that car. I said, it was a Friday. I said, I'm going to give me that car. And he says, no, we can't give it to you. We got to prep it. No, forget it. He says, no, you paid money. We got to prep it. It's the law. We got to prep it. But if you come back tomorrow, 9:30, I'll give you the car. Really? Okay, so I'm there at 7 o'clock camping out. You know, 7 o'clock in the morning, camping out. When it's Saturday morning, Miami Beach. I'm camping out, getting in the car. He says, the car's ready. 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock. I get in that new car. I drive off that lot, whatever it had, like 100 miles on it, had that new car smell. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Better. It was better than any drink. It was better. It was like I was intoxicated. I'm driving that car down Alton Road. There's nobody on the streets. It's like 9:30 in the morning. I'm thinking, like they hadn't even invented Google Earth yet. I'm thinking every woman in China is looking at me. I'm like driving through a stadium like a gladiator. I got my hands out the window. Just look at me. Look at me. Look. I'm okay now. I'm as good as. I'm better than. I'm unbelievable, you know? I come to the first light. Guy pulls up in a brand new Cadillac. I'm low to the ground. He's like higher than me. Sitting next to him, the Playboy bunny. He's like my age. She's like 30, you know? I mean, I'm like, he's like my age. He says, what a waste, you know what I mean? You know, I look at him. He looks at me. I look at him. He looks at me. I say to myself, why can't I have that car? The feeling lasted 2 blocks. The payments lasted 36 months. It was so strong that every year I had to get a new car. I had to have a new car. I had to have a new this. I had to have a new that. You know, I mean, it was just unbelievable. You know what that is, by the way? You know what that is? That's alcoholism. That's alcoholism. The only difference, that coveting, that needing, that wanting, that having to have, that feeling bad because you don't or because you're driving this car or that car, that's alcoholism. The only difference between that and like a regular person is a regular person isn't going to drink themselves to death because of that. You will. So you can get rid of the drinking. How are you going to get rid of the having to have? The thinking. How are you going to do that deal? So we'll discuss some of that next week and the weeks to come. Thank you.